Hey, boys and girls, and Fish and Frank back here again with more fishing reports. And we have Jeff in the chair across from me.
Good morning.
And Jeff is one of our fishing instructors. You can hire Jeff to go out in your boat with you and show you where to go, what to do, how to catch fish, and a variety of different areas. But I would have to say, Jeff, that you fish the whole harbor and
mostly the inshore.
Points in between, but you really like fishing the rivers and back areas where most people don't go.
Yeah, I like the back country. I try to get away from the population, so to speak, so I can maybe find an area that's quiet.
Right.
Yeah, so that it hasn't been hit maybe so much.
And I would say the neat part about it is, I mean, you know the Peace River from the 41 Bridge all the way up past
Up to Brooksville, up there where Payne Creek Park is. Yeah, we usually go up there. We travel that part of the river all the way down to the 75 corridor and out into the harbor, the east wall, the west wall.
Yeah.
You know, if I got to go out to, Placida, I'll take the boat and trailer it out there and put in out there where it's closer for a boat ride.
Right, but you fish the intercoastal and all that. But if somebody's looking for that river experience...
Yeah, I definitely like the river.
You do the Myakka River all the way up to the state park, don't
you? Yeah. That is a trip in itself because once you get up past a certain point, it becomes a wild and scenic river, so you have to idle.
Yeah. Well, most of us, or Sarasota County's idle speed.
Yeah.
So... But it's kind of cool if you really want to go to some, you know, take your boat and learn how to go to very, very wild. I mean, what I love about going up the Peace River is one point you're looking and it kind of looks like Africa. And another point is kind of like, you know, what you would picture the Brazilian rainforest. It has so many different things. Then there's other areas that look like farm country.
Yeah, a lot of it, yeah. But a lot of it does look like just the wild Florida that you would think it would be.
Well, it's originally back, Elgin used to be a movie town.
Yes.
People don't realize that movie companies would go there, and they filmed the old Tarzan movies on the Peace River and the Myakka River. Yeah. And if you want to see, you know, some of these old areas where you can still go and see what they saw in the 1930s when they were making these movies.
Right.
You know, some of it's still there.
And yeah, it is.
You know where they are. So... anyway, getting back to more modern day, you went out the other day. Well, you were fishing.
I finally got to go fishing for a change. It's become to the point where I don't really fish in the two hotter months of the year. Just unless I get out at dark 30, and I'm usually back to the house by 10. You know, back to the boat ramp anyway. Just gets really hot, even with the bimini top up. But I had friends come in from out of state. And the 15-year-old boy had never fished before, and the father wanted to fish, so took a day and took him out into the Placida area because they were staying out in Englewood. So it was closer for me to get to them by going out there.
I still think there's more fish out there this time of year than up here on the river.
It's a lot fresher up here on the river, and it's got a lot of the fish pushed out there where they're baited.
It's so hot and so fresh.
Yeah.
If you really want to catch fish, you got to travel at this point. If you live by the intercoastal, you're fine.
Yes.
But, you know, in a few months from now, the fishing will be better here than it is out there.
Yeah.
But for right now, it's better there than here.
Yeah.
So, you know, good choice either way.
Yeah, right. And, you know, they did well. The boy had never fished with a fishing pole before. So teaching him how to cast the rod and stuff, something that I don't... usually have to do with people that go with me. You know, usually they're experienced people. They just want to go and learn new areas.
You just take friends out.
Usually,
go out. But if you're going to, for hire, you go out in other people's boats.
Yes.
And they drive, you point the way.
That way they're familiar with their boat and what it'll do and where it'll go, you know, and how it handles. Big thing to know, you know. It's nice to know how your boat handles, especially when you're taking it on and off the trailer or putting it in an area where there's a high side current that would, you know, make things more difficult for you.
Right.
But getting back to the kid though, he did real well. He got probably 6 or 8 of the trout. Two of them he could keep, and of course, you know, coming from another country, they don't understand no keeping.
Okay, explain that other country.
They're from Iran.
They're from Iran.
Yeah.
Oh, how cool.
They came over.
I before the first war we had over there, while I was working in Europe and traveling all the shows, I met these guys who were actually selling the Persian rug things. These super expensive hand-woven rugs. But the one guy owned a bait shop right outside of Baghdad.
Oh, really?
And we got talking, and we became good friends. And I literally never heard from him again after the very first war when Bush Sr. went over there to Baghdad.
Yeah.
And I always wondered what happened to him. Some of the coolest people on the planet. You know, we tend to get hung up on this country because our government says this, our government says that.
Yeah.
But what I found traveling around the world is 90% of the population, literally 90%, they want to go to work. They want to go home to their family.
That's
they want
to
take a little bit of a vacation.
That's right.
And whether they live in Iraq or Syria or Russia, I hate the news thing about Russia because in Europe, when you went to the big shows, if you wanted the good party stuff, you found the Russians. First thing you did was go find where the Russians were because they had the best booze and they were a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I think it's just horrific how the news media and everybody else pertains to these people because, like I say, those people from Iran were just amazingly, I mean, this guy was great. And he had a little bait shop there.
Yeah, right.
Who would have thought of bait shop outside of Baghdad?
Well, I laugh because I'm going to the Google map in my head and I'm looking at that area mentally and I'm like, where, you know, I mean, just where are you going to have the bait store? I know
there's a big river that goes through.
Oh, yeah, I know the massive river goes through there.
So,
but you just don't think of, you know, our stereotype is you don't really, you look at it and you're like, people aren't fishing there.
Yeah, but, you know, he had a bait shop there,
and that's
why we became friends. You know, we were talking, and I didn't speak any Arabic at all. I could, we both spoke a little German, and he spoke a little bit of English, and I can almost speak English. So,
almost could.
So anyway, they're from Iran, and you were taking them out fishing.
Yeah, I took them out fishing. Like I said, they expressed some interest in going, so I was willing to take them, and. We went out to the back country out in Pusia and fished a couple areas that actually I hadn't fished before, but there was fish around. So, you know, looking at the horizon and picking up activity, you didn't have to go as far as you normally were planning on going. You know, we were planning on going to point A, but we ended up stopping a lot sooner because we saw activity. I casted the bait net one time coming out of the marina over at Eldred's area, the county ramp there.
Right. As soon as you get outside.
As soon as I got out, I just, there was stuff popping on top of the water. I threw the net one time. I even got a baby gag grouper in the cast net mix with everything, greenbacks and pinfish and stuff. And I had brought some shrimp with me for the, you know, the fail-safe insurance policy. But
you almost guaranteed, unless you've got at least a little bit of shrimp or some type of frozen bait with you, you're going to go out there and you're going to look all day into the next week before you find anything to fish with.
Sure.
If you've got that stuff, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. That's right. That's another reason to take something with you, you know.
And people don't think that's truthful, but honestly, when I was doing charters, I finally got egotistical enough. I said, well, why am I taking anything?
Sure.
I can just go out. There's so much bait
there. Yeah, I'll just get it.
I didn't get paid that day because I not only did we did not catch any fish that day, but I never caught the first piece of bait.
Oh, yeah.
So I couldn't even catch a fish because I couldn't find bait. We tried lures. I had upset the gods.
Yes, you had.
I had gotten arrogant.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, they wouldn't bite on a crab yesterday, but they were biting on the greenbacks, and they were really hitting the shrimp pretty damn hard.
Yeah. So that's kind of weird because we were talking the other night and crabs was everything you wanted.
Right.
If you didn't have crabs, you weren't catching fish and they weren't really touching greenbacks. Then you go out and they're not looking for the crabs. They want the greenbacks.
Right. And it wasn't like we stopped at one area and used crabs and they didn't work and we went somewhere else. We were catching fish, you know, and I put a crab on and tried it and they didn't want it, you know, and they caught fish on either side of me, you know, so. But it was great. You know, the father caught his redfish. He caught a nice 24-inch redfish, a beautiful red. Of course, he did the reel it right up to the tip of the rod and whip it in the boat before I could even get a hold of the net. But it was like, it's all good. It's in the boat.
That's why, you know, if you do that, replacement tips. Oh, bring your rod in.
Yeah.
We take the old tip off, put the new tip on. Oh. It costs you $280 plus tax. It's $3, yeah. And we'll take care of that.
They had that red fish reeled right up to the rod tip, you know. And
isn't it crazy how people, when they don't know anything about fishing, they just want it right. They want it. Yep. Reeled into the rod.
I couldn't even have enough time because we were probably about 20 feet away from the spot, and by the time I put the boy's pole down and turned around, because I reeled his pole in real quick so it wouldn't get tangled up, and by the time I did that and turned around, he already had the fish to the boat and was whipping it in the boat as I was saying, wait a second, you
wait
know.
A minute, wait a minute.
Yeah, but it was fine, you know, so. But, yeah, the boy got some really nice trout, and he had never caught any fish before. And another thing, like I was saying about they don't understand that they can't keep fish, you know, he caught several, like, 4-pound hardhead catfish, and he was like, oh, beautiful, we keep. And I'm like, you don't want this, you know. And they were like, oh, let's try it, you know. So, you know, they could have had a new experience, but I passed on it at that point. I figured to err on the caution of the side of the safety with the catfish.
Well, if I'm going out and I've got people like that, I take a small extra cooler that I don't like.
Right, and throw them in there.
And I'll put some ice in it, and then I can put
That's
the catfish in a cooler that I'm not fond of because they have to be very dead before I'll flay them.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. I wouldn't touch them. But I figured to err on the side of caution with a 15-year-old on the boat, and
I'm with you 100%.
Last thing I want him to do is get an infection before he goes back.
Yeah, because they hurt. They
and
hurt bad.
I don't think the care over there is quite as good as it is here. But I don't know. I could be mistaken. I don't know.
I think I don't know about Iran anymore. Like I say, I lost all contact. I don't have any friends there anymore, you know, which is unfortunate.
They were talking how they live on the southern end of the Caspian Sea. They live right on the sea.
Right.
And if you look at it on a map, there isn't much there. I mean, it's a little, got a little rural area building along the edge of the coast there. And then the upper part of the Caspian Sea is Russia. So, you know, there's nothing up there.
Right.
You know, you look up there and there's some roads that go to the lake, but you don't really see anything.
You know, what's weird is Russia is one of the largest countries there is. It's huge.
Right.
And they are so far down in the fishing industry. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand that because...
caviar.
You know, and the only thing I will say is their recreational fishing industry is slowly growing.
Mm.
But I think when it was socialist, you didn't have access to the equipment.
Yeah, and I don't think so much of it was recreational. It was probably a need.
Yeah, it was, you know, fishing to eat.
Yeah.
But now they're a capitalist society.
Yeah, and they're starting to get more modernized.
So slowly it's growing a little bit. But you have to watch, if you're going to be very successful in the tackle business, you know, you can have a bait shop and know what's going on in your area. But if you're going to be a little more successful, like we do the tent sale, and we have people come from everywhere, and we're doing a new product showcase next year, you've really got to be aware of what's going on in Russia, Europe, Australia. You can't find anything about China because the whole they have a big trade show there, but it's morphed into a horrific thing. I was going to go, but it's just not even worth it.
Right.
But I do want to go to the European one because in Europe they have the tackle that becomes popular there comes here about after 4 years later.
Oh, wow.
It takes about, if it does well there for 2 years,
then
they'll start thinking about bringing it over, and by the fourth year I'll see it here.
Oh, wow.
And so that's why it's kind of critical for me to keep up on what's going on in Europe. And I started watching the Russian market because Russia is so big and has so little fishing thing. You never know when an opportunity might present itself.
Yeah, you never know.
Now, I don't speak a word. I speak maybe a dozen words of Russian, but
all curse words.
No, actually, all the languages I learned and all the different things it was always for work.
Right, right.
You know, I'd be selling tackle in a country, and I would write down phrases and things of their language so that, you know, you can make contact with people.
Right, right.
But I never learned. I'm probably the only person on the planet that learned all these languages.
Right.
And did not know one cuss word. Not yeah, one.
When we learned them, I guess mostly we were in school growing up. So we had the, you know, the Puerto Rican kid was in school. So you learned all those kind of words.
But
you
had a more diverse school. I went to a Wonder Bread school.
Yeah, right.
Middle of farm country.
Yeah.
There was no ethnic diversity.
Being a retirement community down here, you had a much more ethnic diversity.
A big ethnic diversity was a redhead.
Yeah, right.
People say, well, you know, I said, man, I think the first time I ever saw a black guy, I was in my late teens, and he was a sax player for one band, and the only thing I knew about him was you didn't want to be in a band with him because you had no chance at the women because at least he was different.
Right. You know? Yeah, right.
He was
could
different.
Be your friend that way. Yeah.
He was a nice guy. Great sax player.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I guess over in Iran, this family, apparently they have their equivalent of a social security number over there.
Yeah.
And what they do is they draw a number each year. And if your social security number gets drawn, you get to leave the country.
There you go.
You know, and seek other opportunities. So that's how they got out of the country. Probably when the boy was he was probably 6 years old when they first came over.
Right.
And they ended up, friends of mine, married to an Iranian back in the 50s. So he's got a whole family over here.
Right.
And when they came over, that was a person that he had working on one of his buildings over in Iran. So he brought him over here, hoping he would get a new opportunity, let him stay at his house. They finally got their own house. So, you know, but they go back and forth. They come here for the school year. And then when school's over, they go back over to Iran and spend the rest of the year over there.
I would
say
that'd be really good up until they hit college. Then you go to college somewhere else. I've seen the colleges here.
Yeah.
There's only about 1%,
I think,
whatever.
Oklahoma, I think, is where they're at.
But Oklahoma's got some great colleges.
Yeah, they're out in
Oklahoma. I was watching some of that stuff the other day.
And actually, the grandfather is a deacon. He was a deacon at a school in Oklahoma when he came over.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So, you know,
actually,
you never know.
Very nice
isn't
people. Very nice
so,
people.
So, anyway, I guess
very
we
got
to get back to the fishing. It's supposed to be a fishing show. Sorry about that, boys and girls.
That's all right.
You know.
But their experience was great. They'd never been out fishing. They got to go out. They were very apprehensive about going out in the boat because they kind of are looking at the Gulf of Mexico and they're thinking it's going to be like that.
Right.
And I'm trying to explain to them, you know, no, we're going to be within arm's reach of green growth trees
and you can get
up,
out of the boat and stand up. If you fall out of the boat, don't try and swim,
and
just stand up.
They're asking about sharks and all this stuff, you know, and of course the boy's very into finding the shark's teeth and all that kind of thing. But we get back there and I'm like, well, you know, we aren't going to see that much sharks where we're going. Well, of course, when we pull into one of the areas, about a 4-foot bull shark came up and I tried to get him hooked up on a cut piece of bait, tried shrimp, tried everything we were throwing at him, but he just kept moving around. There was a lot of bait out there, so I had to, like I said, I threw the net one time.
So what'd they say when all of a sudden the shark comes up?
It was like, oh, shark, and I'm like, yep, there he is, you know, and they're like, you know, will he come and attack us? You know, they really, I mean, almost thought that, you know, he might seek them out, you know, and I was like, oh, no, he'll be fine. He's just doing his thing, you know,
see,
cruising, looking for
you're
breakfast.
You're much nicer than me. I would look at him and said, oh, yeah, Iranian sweetmeat for
oh,
shark.
Oh, yeah, right. Now, see, their brother would have done that to him. That's funny. But, yeah, we fished one spot. We got some really nice trout. That was over basically in front of Catfish Creek entrance. And then we went down over to Smith's Gap, went in there. That's actually where he got the redfish at. Then we went over to another area, and they both caught redfish and trout over there, several catfish. And like I said, they were, you know, they really wanted to keep them, but I kind of erred on the side of caution on that day. And they had plenty of really nice fish to eat, so we really didn't need the other ones.
Well, like I say, I agree.
And I know it's a stereotype with the catfish.
And I agree with you, but it is very dangerous to handle them. And the only thing is, and sounds stereotypical or, you know, what do they call that? Profiling.
Right.
But if I have, when I would have somebody from another country on the boat, that's when I would throw that other cooler in.
Sure.
Because they don't have our, you know, okay, it's a catfish, it's not good. It's a fish.
It's
is
a
it
fish
edible?
They
yeah.
Eat it.
and they just can't understand why we would pick and choose.
Sure, exactly.
So that's when I would throw the extra cooler on the boat, put a little ice in
it. Right, right.
And then if they, and because, you know, you flay those tail sections off those fish, and it's actually wonderfully tasty.
It is.
You
it
know,
is.
But.
The trout had roe in them. We ate that. They love that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, there's something I wouldn't have suspected. How'd you cook up the roe?
Fried it in a frying pan with some oil and butter. You know, basically, that's all we did. The fish, we baked in the oven, split the trout open, you know, butterflied them.
Right.
And the redfish I filleted, so.
Very cool.
But, yeah, they were very now, happy.
That was something I was very surprised at. You know, okay, we're getting rid of this, but literally that's fried caviar.
Yes, exactly. And they were just, that's the word they used, because that is their word for fish eggs. It's caviar. That's what that means. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what they called it right away.
Well, it's actually fact.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, it's...
It's just we have another American
Do they use the word
term.
Caviar?
Yes. Yeah, they use the word caviar. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that if you were to, you know, like Google the phone in Iranian and asked it what that was, it would come up, and that's what it would say right away would be caviar, you know.
Gotcha.
What is fish eggs, you know, come up caviar.
Okay. Well, you never know what you're going to hear here.
Yeah. And then by 12:30, we were getting very warm, had the Bimini top up, so, you know, you could get in the shade. But the father looked at me and said, "So, Mr. Jeff, how long are we going to stay?" And I was like, "Well, we're putting the last piece of bait on now, about maybe 5 minutes, and we'll be headed back to the cabin." So, but they were happy. They got to experience it, and I think none of them had, because the night before, the mother-in-law was like, "They're very apprehensive about going out on a boat, you know." And of course, I was teasing with them, saying, you know, the boy was saying, "How big is your boat?" And I'm like, "Oh, 18 feet, you know." And he's like, "A boat would go by," and he'd say, "That size?" And I'd go, "Oh, no, much smaller than that, you know." And I said, "We'll have to have you bailing with a bucket, you know, all the time while we're out, so the boat doesn't sink." And he was like, "No, no." So, you know, a little bit of teasing there, but
all good.
Yes.
So, I'm going to drop back into the fishing for just a second. If you came up to a shoreline and you were putting them out, how did you present the bait?
The bait was presented into the with the current. In other words, when we pulled up to a line of mangroves, we would anchor probably 30 to 40 feet off. I mean, a really good cast distance. So there was very minimal chance of them casting the baits into the mangroves, but yet they could still reach them. And now with the current the way it was, and I was up current of the mangrove line, then they could let their baits drift down the shoreline. We were using live baits, obviously, under a float. And they were and absolutely the easiest way to get people to get fish, you know. Once they do that a few times, you can maybe see how their casting skills are and maybe throw them another pole that's got a lure on it, you know, and let them give it a shot with that. But the live bait under a bobber, without a doubt, is a great seek out method, you know.
So did you start with shrimp, crab, white
bait? We started with the white bait and the pinfish. I was getting pinfish about the size of a quarter to a 50 cent piece. Was probably the largest pinfish that we caught, and they worked great because they weren't down long. And I mean, you either had a small mangrove snapper on, or you had the trout on, or whatever.
But you started out by mixing your baits and finding out what the fish were looking
for.
Yeah,
it wasn't until we got to spot number 3 where they actually put a shrimp on, where we had to put a shrimp on, just because of a change of bait. And because we had the pinfish up against the shoreline, and apparently maybe with the incoming tide, the other bait hadn't made it back there yet, you know, so they weren't really, I don't know whether they were maybe
so as the other baits started not working, then you brought the shrimp out.
Then we went to the shrimp, yeah, you know, food for everybody, you know,
so,
and that's what they were out, you know.
Well, that's kind of a key thing when you're looking at this. Even if you start with one bait and you're catching a lot of fish, you should not have the expectation that same bait is going to work in every spot all day.
Exactly, yeah.
If you're, you know, catching a lot of fish with one type of bait at one spot, you go to the next spot and you're not getting fish, switch your bait out.
Exactly.
Put
Don't
a different
be afraid
type
to change
on.
It, yeah.
So, okay.
But yeah, when we got to that third spot and he put a shrimp on, that's when he got the really nice redfish right off the bat. And then we started catching redfish off that particular mangrove line, you know, and all we had to do was get our baits within oh, a foot or two of the mangrove shoreline, and the current was doing the rest for us, you know. And it's probably, everywhere I look out there now, it's probably about 15 feet of overhang to where you can get your baits up under into the shade of the mangroves, and that's where the redfish, you could see the red flash as they were coming out from underneath the bushes.
Yeah, and that's why I try and tell people, you know, when you're fishing like a little cove, a little tiny inlet right. in between the trees, you're not so much fishing that little cut in the trees
right.
as it is that allows you to get your bait further back
right,
because
right.
the other trees are overhanging so far.
Right.
That's the clear spot. You get it up in there, and the fish are probably either to the left or the right,
right.
underneath the trees, not in that opening.
Right.
But it allows you to get back 6-8
sure.
feet into the opening rather than trying to cast under the tree.
Exactly.
You cast between them.
Right. And then using the current to your advantage.
Right.
You know, we'll definitely put the bait in the right spot. It only took one time for the father to learn that. And the biggest hurdle that the boy had was he wanted to cast it one way, and I kept trying to tell him, you know, grab the bail with your right hand and pull it back and grab the string with your first finger. And he understood the concept, but as soon as he would go to do it, he would try to switch hands. So I was, okay, I know what to do. Took the handle off the reel, turned it around, put it on the other side. Now try it. Boom. First time, okay, there you go.
Yeah.
You want to do it with the other hand, you can go ahead and do it with the other hand.
But
you know,
the rod needs to stay in the same hand you cast with.
Yes, right, yes.
You can't cast and then switch the rod to the
right.
other hand, because often that's when you get hit.
That is true. Yes.
As soon as that bait hits the water, that's the most likely time to get a strike.
Bob or gone.
And you're switching hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that does you no good.
Yeah, and by that time, the redfish could be back 5-10 feet under the mangroves, and you're either going to put your rod tip down to the bottom of the water where you're at, and hopefully it'll go under the roots.
Right.
Or you're going to lose him. He's going to pop you off.
So that's the biggest thing about it, is trying to keep the rod in the same hand you cast with.
Yeah.
You know, it's expedient. Put two fingers on each side of the stem of the reel, where
yep.
the reel comes up to the rod and it goes down. If you put two fingers on each side, your index finger is in the correct place where you can grab the line
right.
as you go to cast.
Right.
If you only have one finger in front of that reel stem, you cannot reach the line effectively.
No,
it slows you way down, everything goes bad, and you've really got to, you know, try and minimize your movements, because
right.
a couple of seconds makes all the difference in the world.
Oh yeah,
sometimes.
You're fishing those bushes like that. Yeah, anywhere where you got structure. You know, grouper's another good one.
Yeah. All right. Well, boys and girls, anything else? Oh, if you've got advice...
Take a lot of water with you.
Okay. If you've got advice for somebody about where to go to have a good time this weekend, any good pointers for people?
I would go out early as you can. Try to get out to one of the boat ramps along the Gulf and go back. It's been beautiful weather out there. Go experience some of that backcountry out there.
And the big thing is, if you get in an area and all of a sudden your depth finder's flashing 3 feet,
stop.
Idle.
Try fishing that spot.
Yeah.
You know, because the first spot we fished was, you know, 3 foot deep. It was right when we came out of the 8 foot normal area of water depth. As soon as we dropped up to 3 feet, I just stopped it, put the sticket pin in, and let's try fishing and observe what's going on in the area.
And one good thing is remember to fish behind you back to that 8 feet of water.
Yes, right.
If you've got people there and you're in the open, you've got somebody fishing in the shallows and then somebody
yep.
trying to fish the drop-off where it
right.
went from 3 to 8 foot.
Right, right.
And you really want to cover both sides of that, so you want to be on the cusp of those two, back just a little bit into the shallows, but where you can still cast into that deeper water,
yeah.
because different types of fish may be there than
That's
what's
right.
up in the shallows.
You might get mackerel out there, trout out there, there's no telling,
so,
and then, of course, you're in inner side.
Yeah, it's you know, a great point that a lot of people forget. They're so busy to get to the mangroves, they forgot
right.
there's another good spot there.
Right. And well, and you know, taking people that aren't familiar with fishing, it's always nice to stop at a spot, and I don't want to call it a dummy spot, but stop at a spot before you're going to go to that redfish hole where you got these nice redfish all penned up. Stop before you get there somewhere and see how these people can cast. You know, you more than likely, if you're taking somebody that's, you know, unfamiliar with it, they might not be able to pick it up. You might have to cast it in there for them when you get to that redfish spot.
Well, a nice spot about it is it kind of gets you people can figure out what they're going to do, sure. what their role in this whole thing is.
Exactly.
So,
moving around the boat.
Yeah. If you stop out in the middle in an open area, like especially where the flats just start, well, they can just kind of cast. It doesn't matter
where it goes.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
People can get very frustrated if you're trying to get them to cast at the mangroves and they don't know how to cast.
Yeah.
It's hard to get used to the rhythm and the motion of fishing
sure.
when you're in a I have to cast there situation.
That's right.
But if you're in a just okay, cast over there somewhere.
Right.
It allows them to build up a little confidence
right.
and hopefully you catch a few fish out there.
Right.
And then when you get back into that, okay, you have to fish right their spot.
Then they got a feel for what they're doing, a lot more evident of what they can do.
And they got a little more confidence.
Yes.
So, good point, Jeff. Very nice. Yeah, I knew there was a reason we were doing a show here.
Yeah, we could edit out the whole rest of it and just that last 2 minutes.
Yeah. You know, who knows if anybody, I mean, by the time we get done BSing, if they even listen to
right.
the last part of the show. But,
right.
you know, you never know.
Well, that's, we can always bring that up again.
Yes.
Anyway, go fishing. Bring a lot of water with you.
Yeah, this is Radio Fishing. Fishing Frank here in the chair, and Jeff, one of our fishing instructors. Jeff here in the store on Thursday afternoons, Friday afternoons, Saturday mornings, and Sunday,
pretty much Sunday.
All day. Yeah. So if you want to talk to Jeff about where to go, what to do, and get a little personal information from Jeff, just stop by at the store and any one of those times, and Jeff will be happy. We have a table over here that's for nothing but teaching. It doesn't serve any other function. And we've got plenty of charts, satellite photos, and stuff like that, so we can literally point to a spot and help you understand what you need to do when you get there. And Jeff's excellent at that. So how many years you been here now, Jeff?
15, I guess.
15 yeah. years.
Stop so. Counting.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's been a long time. Anyway, Fishing Frank and Jeff, thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next Radio Fishing. Bye-bye.
Bye.